This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for episode 11 of season 8 of Amazing Race Canada, aka the finale. It is our final recap podcast for the season. I'm Jessica Lise. I'm very excited to break it all down with you and find out exactly how the path to victory went, because spoiler alert, guys, it was a winding path and that made for a very exciting leg. I'm super excited to talk it all out with my co-hosting partner, Mr. Dan Heaton. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jess. You know, I'm going to coin a phrase right now, an amazing race. That was the phrase that John coined. Very, very clever and new. I was impressed.
Oh, good for John. You know, he's a trailblazer. He really is. Between that and rip and
read. Yeah, he's just inspired to coin a phrase on the mat. Or finish line. And I wanted to do that too. So here we go.
Well, here we are. And what an amazing race it was. We are here at the end. Craig and Catherine have been crowned our winners for season 8. On a scale of 0 to 1, how surprised were you about this?
You know, episode on its own, it seemed very unpredictable in terms of lots of switching and the end. They were all in the library. So if you just judge it by the episode, it could be considered. But obviously, I did pick them first in the draft. Ooh, but really, you know, I've done that. Even numbered seasons, that's all I can do. But really, I will say that I think, as we talked about in previous shows, there were multiple things. The main thing was I felt like even this week in the intro, they went through the story of each team and they were like, Fernella, they talked about their mom. That's a good story. You had Catherine and Craig talking about, you know, her story and their friendship and brain cancer and everything. Great story. And then the other two teams, they were just like, it doesn't really matter. So you kind of sense where the show was leading already. And I felt like they had the most compelling story and jumped off the screen. And then other factors we mentioned, it seemed like they were going to win, but it was definitely a close one.
Yeah, it was a close one. And I started to feel a little bit of doubt when they had a little bit of a rocky start there, Dan. And, you know, we have seen so many Amazing Race finales where it starts off with like one big adrenaline task. And then whichever team got to the adrenaline task first is the first one onto the next task and nobody else can touch them and they end up winning. And in this leg of the race, there was so much switching of orders. There was never a team that was completely out of it at any point until you got to the home stretch. And I really, I still thought in my head, like, based on the edit, based on the outside factors we knew about, based on the storytelling, it really was looking like Craig and Catherine win. But then they come out of the gate, they're in third place, and they just can't catch up and can't catch up. I was starting to doubt it for a really long time.
Yeah. And even, you know, when things seem to get better where they, you know, we're jumping ahead, they get ahead, then they fall behind again. And so it's kind of a lot of back and forth. And, you know, you could, because like you've said, a lot of finales, especially when they're doing cabs, a lot of finales either, you know, I think these cabs were hired by the show, I'm not sure, but basically you could go the wrong way. Or we saw, every team had an example of something they couldn't do where you went, oh, they're probably done. Like Jesse and Marika couldn't find the ship. And so did Catherine and Craig. And I thought, oh, that's really too bad, you know, that this is going to happen. But no, and that's where I think, so I found that the Amazing Race Canada in general has better finales than the US overall, because one of the things is they make them do so many things. So when you have more tasks, the likelihood is, like when you have 5 or 6 things versus like 3 or whatever, there's going to be a chance. And also beyond the jumping in the water, there were a lot of things that could have, you could find ways to move forward. Plus you're navigating, you're trying to find your cab driver. There was a lot to it. So I felt like this leg in particular felt really balanced, where they had a lot of different skills and that allowed teams to move around and get ahead and get behind and everything. And so, like we've talked about this season, we haven't always said every task was amazing, but in general, I feel like the legs have been structured pretty well, especially in the end, like this final stretch. I feel like the last few legs have been structured really well for this type of thing.
Yeah, well, that begs a question then, Dan. What would you rather have? A leg with three really amazing tasks or a leg with six passable tasks?
I kind of like both. I mean, it's a cop out, but really I would think that when there's six, okay. Like even this time, I will say the ordering of the food. Okay. It was a nice vibrant market. Okay. Didn't really excite me that much. Other things I enjoy. So I wouldn't say that every task this time was like, wow, they really, even the final task I felt like was edited a little strangely. So I feel like it wasn't that way, but it did seem like at least if the goal was, we're going to make them go to a lot of different places, do a lot of different things, and at the end, it's going to come down to the memory task, then the show, I mean, if that was the goal, which it succeeded completely, because we only spent, like we talked about, 5-6 minutes on most tasks or something, you can get away with less, I guess.
Yeah, I would almost call this the only thing I can think of right now, and this is such a weird metaphor, but it reminds me of the show Supermarket Sweep. Do you remember this show, Dan?
Oh, yeah.
There was a reboot recently, I believe with Leslie Jones was the host, but the 80s version of Supermarket Sweep, this was one of my jams when I was a kid. I was a strange child, but there in Supermarket Sweep, you had a lot of mini games leading up to, like, they called it the big sweep, I think, where you would go through the supermarket and try to get as much merchandise as possible to have the highest total to go into the final round. And a lot of this game, all these little mini games, was just to add on time to your big sweep at the end. And so you would compete for like 10 seconds. You compete here and there. And this really felt to me like every one of these little mini events going up to the memory task was just giving you more time to work with the memory task. And that was what was ultimately going to decide it. And that's why, when you really think about it, there was one question in one spot on this board. It was the same question that tripped everybody up. And so, much like every other leg of the Amazing Race that we complain about, it did ultimately come down to one single task. And that was what decided the whole thing. But it was, the lead up to it was very compelling, and you got to see teams build up a lead and then have that lead to play with, and ultimately a team was able to come back from not having it. And I thought that made for a good story. Like, I always loved it on Supermarket Sweep when team number three ended up being the team that won, even though they were one that had the least time. I don't know. That's just me. We love to root for an underdog.
Yeah, they got the giant things of meat. They went
on
the diapers or whatever. They went to the right spot. They didn't like get the stuff that wasn't worth as much. They had studied the show. Yeah. So, no, I agree. And I think that's the thing, where if you look at it and you say, do we want it to be like game showy, the fairest, where the team that does well in everything and, you know, has like, that's not great TV. But so you look at it and you say, well, yeah, it only came down to who understood the word licks and didn't get thrown off by the case part. Yes. I mean, I'm really curious too, because I like behind the scenes with the show, I wonder how much they thought when they wrote everything, they went, this is going to be the thing, because we're going to say case and everybody's going to think of there has been a crime and all that, instead of thinking of, you know, the stamp task, which is funny because we talked about how that stamp task was really boring, and it was so boring that no one remembered they had done it for a while. So I guess that's totally true. Everyone just basically said, what did we do that leg? They went through the three things, totally forgot about the stamps. It was like, it didn't happen. The show also felt that way and maybe tried to fool them, but it's so hard to know because, again, even though it was edited, like, all the teams are down to that, and really it could be anyone in a minute. I think they were all there, but do you think, Jess, that because we would see teams together and they'd say, oh, Brendan O'Connor are here, or Jesse Marica, But we didn't, you couldn't totally know that Catherine and Craig were on that one thing, when Brendan O'Connor were on that one thing, when they were on that one thing. It could have been a little different.
It could have, but if it had been drastically different, you wouldn't have a team. You wouldn't have the top two teams of the day be the teams that started out in the bottom. I think everybody had to be close enough that it ended up being anybody's game by the end. So I think they really were all there at the same time.
Oh yeah, they were all there, because you could tell the show even did a good job of, like, when there would be a shot and they showed the brothers and then they panned down and showed like Fernella or something, like they were, because I think the show understands, you know, they listen to the show, Jess, of course they understand this, that we're not fooled, you know, we know. So, but I don't know, how should we dig back, go backwards here to the beginning, or how do you want to kind of dive into this further?
Yeah, I think it now is the point where it makes sense to go back to the first roadblock and start to take it apart task by task. And then leading up to those final tasks, where I have a lot more thoughts on that. But yeah, we're going to Pearson Airport. We fly to Vancouver. And then we get this helicopter task, which, you know, I don't love these, but you have to have them. It's like a staple of an Amazing Race finale. Like, you got to have one thrilling task that everybody's super excited to do that, you know, out in the real world, you'd probably pay $300 to do yourself.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I did enjoy Craig's, like, thank God that's you. Like, he was so relieved, you know. But really, overall, I mean, this is one, though, where you watch it. Yeah, like you said, I watch it and I go, that sounds fun. And it also wasn't that scary. It wasn't like one where the show was like, we're going to jump from 300 feet, which they probably would not do. I don't think that'd be very safe.
But safe, Dan.
Yeah, that would be, especially the way Catherine jumped. Oh, that would not have been safe. Oof. You know, she did not have a very graceful jump. But I would say that, yeah, the main thing with this was, could teams find the pier? That was the challenge, because it seemed like one of those weird cases where, like, I can see it, but I don't know how to get there. And that tripped up the two teams. And I mean, it's hard to say how far apart, because the show really mined a lot of editing. But like we said, that put the teams that ultimately are first and second, Jesse and Marika and Catherine and Craig, onto that second flight, which I also did appreciate the fact that they had two teams on there. Because if they had done one team at a time, then you would have had that weird split that might have played a bigger role, which we've seen in plenty of finales, whether it's a team having to jump across and grab a clue or whatever, where once a team gets ahead and they're two split up, that's it.
Yeah, I think that was the danger. And the clever subversion of that was to put two teams in the helicopter at once. The thing I really loved about this was another example of a task that it was like Catherine ticking stuff off her bucket list. And you could see how excited she was to get to do it, and how excited she was just to be there. And I think at the end of the day, this story really is the story of Catherine, like, having this second chance at life and getting the opportunity to do all of these amazing things that at one point it didn't look like she would have had a chance to do any of them. And Craig is kind of the cheerleader on the sidelines, helping her get through, like, cross off this giant bucket list of stuff. And I think it was really fun to see her do those tasks, because he's always taking a step back and like, oh, is this is the more fun task? Well, then you got to do it. And not just because he doesn't like heights, but because it's legitimately like the more fun looking thing. So that was my takeaway from the helicopter task. And yeah, there's not much to say here. You have to have it. And it was, if we're going to have to have it, this was about as good as we can expect.
Yeah, I agree. And it was great to see that during the entire season, she tended, you know, to get to do those. And I mean, he got to do the dancing and the roller skating and some of the fun things. And I think he actually worked. I mean, he was a little uncoordinated, but, you know, he hadn't roller skated in a long time. But really, overall, she got to do, and there weren't that many this season. I know he climbed up the Ferris wheel, but that many kind of like, fun. I mean, it sounds weird to say there weren't that many fun things. There were a lot of fun things, but I think of like the flying of the plane, which they showed, or this one, or ones that I'm trying to remember. I think she also did. Wait, the paragliding might have been that. Okay, that was during the leg when they were not there. but she would have done it, I'm sure. If
that yeah, was she true. Definitely would have done it.
I get a little thrown around because I'm like, wait, Julie and Kathy were there. Okay, that was during that. It's just, yeah, it's too much. But yeah, there's not that much. Really, I think we could probably go on to roadblock number two, who should just roll with it, which is the roller skating, which in a weird way kind of reminded me of the dog task, because again, they were doing like an obstacle course and, you know, had to do it in a time, and there it was a little silly. I don't know. See, pretty similar.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar. It is, as far as tasks that require some skill and some coordination, I liked it. But as a task in an Amazing Race finale, I felt like maybe we overcorrected a little bit away from the flashy razzle dazzle task. And now we're going to go into something that I could set up in my driveway. Right. So I don't know how I feel about it as far as like pizzazz, but I think it was a solid roadblock in terms of actually being a roadblock. It was a task that had to be performed and a task that required some semblance of skill. And in that regard, I think it was perfectly serviceable.
Yeah, it didn't seem like they were being too strict, though, with like the leg lift, especially because Franca literally almost fell down and barely had her leg lifted up from what we saw and was able to get through it. And not to pick on that, but in general, it was like, you know, they said, oh, Craig, you had some nice flair. I was like, he almost fell down. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe more than the others. So this did feel like something like we're going to make them doing something silly. I mean, we did have the case. Probably the most memorable thing was us learning that Brendan was apparently a very good figure skater. And I also really enjoyed the reactions of people just being like, yeah, these guys, I mean, come on, he can figure skate. But really, he was better than the others, but no one really did too poorly. A few people fell down, but it was pretty quick.
I mean, this is Canada, Dan. Everybody ice skates. Like, I think you get kicked out of Canada if you don't learn how to ice skate at some point. And while it is definitely not the same thing, there are skills that transfer over. And so I don't think there's anybody on this race that had never been on a pair of some kind of skates.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could do this, but I am not a great ice or roller skater. But I will say this was not one of those things. Like, there are some tasks where I go, I'll never finish that. This was not one of those. I felt like I could have done this and only fallen down about 15 times. So it would have been fine.
Yeah, it would have. It's something I think you would have eventually gotten.
Yeah, and not had a huge impact. We were still here kind of in the Brendan and Connor run to the finish edit, which I went, huh, they're really doing well. I really didn't expect this. But oh no, that would not continue for much longer, Jess. Not for much longer.
No, then we hit the stopper for them. And this is an unusual type of task to see in a final leg, for sure. It is a task that we have seen on many an Amazing Race, but any kind of performance-based thing, I think they tend to feel so subjective that they don't put them in a final. And so this was very, very interesting to have it here. But it did kind of hit some marks. It hit some, you know, this is going to require some skill, but this is also going to require some pizzazz. So I think where we had maybe a big pizzazz task in the helicopter and a more of a skill task in the roller skating, now we have a mix of both.
Yeah, and I do feel like, this is a case where one team definitely benefited, but, you know, they wouldn't always benefit on everything. You know, Catherine and Craig, of course. Catherine, my goodness. Some good singing there. I almost thought that basically she was part of the ensemble, you know, that good. And Craig, very solid. But really, this was a case where I think it was challenging. I mean, this was one where it wasn't the hardest singing we've ever seen, but it was kind of a multiple things. One, you had to sing in a way that, you know, you at least were kind of going along to it. But I think the more challenging thing was the fact that it was in a different language. And you had to kind of catch up with that and the opera part of it, which, poor Connor. Poor Connor. Oh, boy. That was funny, though. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it does bring to mind one of my all-time favorite leg fails. When Amazing Race US Season 23 was in Vienna, and they had to learn a song with the Vienna Boys Choir, and poor poor Tim of Tim and Danny not able to sing the song, and it ended up getting them eliminated. It was very sad, but this had that same energy. It was like, they're trying so hard and it's just not in their wheelhouse, but they eventually managed to nail it after many, many, many trial and errors.
I will say Captain Craig did have to make a second attempt. We did not see the first attempt, but it did say second. And then everyone else seemed to be, you know, a few. I mean, I don't want to just pick on Connor. I mean, Jesse was not really killing it either, but we didn't see as much of them there because, again, Brendan and Connor, first team that arrives, they're going to get the whole, they go to rehearse, and person they rehearsed with was having a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. She was just like, almost purposely really was started out singing like opera, and they looked at her like, it was very similar to that, the dancing one with Connor, where he got this look in his eye like, I'm on TV and I don't think I can do this. And I know I'm on TV and this is scaring me and I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And you don't see that from them very often. Like even when they weren't doing well as racers, when they almost got eliminated, you don't see them get that sort of gobsmacked by the whole thing. So that was an interesting side of them that we had not really gotten a lot of. They were great at dealing with adversity until they came up against this.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the show playing the sound of glass breaking whenever anyone failed, which I assume that didn't actually happen. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'm going to assume it didn't happen. I think I also enjoyed the glass breaking sound effect whenever they showed people like clinking their glasses. A couple of times they clinked glasses together and you heard like the Foley effect of the glass breaking.
Oh man, you know, it's just Amazing Race Canada editors are just going all out here. Have been very solid this year, but yeah, so this is the situation where Catherine and Craig pull ahead, but Fernella does pretty well too. So really it's kind of like the top two teams kind of step apart here for now. But it doesn't happen because we move on to, it's a buyer's market, to the Richmond Night Market, which was hopping, I have to say.
That place looked amazing. I mean, we have some stuff like that here in New York. We have Smorgasburg, which I think is a similar thing, takes place in the daytime. And I think we actually, in Queens, there actually is a night market similar to this, but not quite as huge. Yeah, I thought this is another popular Amazing Race task of the, like, get all these different items from this list and bring them back here. That's like every crowded marketplace in every country around the world. You have this task, and this is just one more iteration of that. But it's a task that we use a lot for a reason, because it is one that works well in terms of like strategy, in terms of having to cope with chaos. And you saw people approach this in very different ways. And I thought, especially Fernella, I thought they were maybe going to pull ahead at this point with their strategy of just like ordering all the food at once and then like coming back around and picking it up. I thought that was, I was surprised more people weren't doing that.
Yeah, you could tell they were in their element there because, yeah, it seemed like Catherine and Craig would order, again, from what we saw in the little editing, and wait. And then there were some where it was like, it's going to be 20 minutes or whatever. And I'm sure they didn't just stand there for 25 minutes. But you even saw Fernella at one point just like goes up there and is like, step, can I get in line or whatever? I mean, there was a lot of that, which I felt like they were like, I think they were thinking, this is our opportunity to get ahead, which they did get ahead, sort of. You know, they did finish the task first. And the cute kids who gave out the clue, they were able to pass out these orders, and it's like, wow, they're in first. And unfortunately, we saw so much of their wonderful cab driver, Jermail, saw his name being said many times during the show. If that guy wanted to hear his name on TV, he really succeeded, I will say. But unfortunately, I think, but they had parked in the parking lot and then got stuck in traffic. Felt like they were in downtown Disney or, you know, something. They were stuck in traffic, never to get out. And I say that purposely because Disney Springs has a fancy parking garage. No, the old parking lot, it was terrible. And they got stuck. And then that allowed Catherine and Craig to basically pull even. I think the teams were basically even after that.
I once spent 2.5 hours in the parking lot at downtown Disney because we couldn't figure out where we parked the rental car.
Oh, no.
So
That's another different issue.
I know exactly what you're talking about here.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I don't think we can set any of the blame for Fenella not winning the race on Gurmail's shoulders. I think Gurmail was playing the hand he was dealt and he was doing the best he could. But it really did seem like it came down to a parking choice for them. I did like this was maybe my favorite moment of the entire episode. I loved when they were waving the Amazing Race clue out the window and like screaming, "We're in a race, we're in a race," because that's something I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to do on Amazing Race US. Like, and the fact that you could just like kind of throw it around for clout is it's a genius move. And it's also hilarious.
Yeah, I will say at this market, I don't go on Reality Fan Forum for like spoilers and stuff. But there had to be somebody at this market who was like, "Ooh, the Amazing Race. I'm going to take some pictures and post them somewhere." I'm not sure. I don't want to go down that road too much, but I am sure. I mean, there's just so many people there and the teams are there. And granted, we also saw this too at the beginning of the leg to kind of address what you said, in that everyone was saying, so you even heard Craig say $250,000 over and over. And I was like, wow, that's very specific. I didn't know they could say all that either. So, you know, really, really just diving in. I assume they don't have rules against that.
Yeah, they would have said something if you weren't. And I think at the end of the race, a lot of the gloves come off, you know, and a lot of the rules maybe get a little bit more flexible.
Yeah, maybe the final leg, it's just like, well, we're in a city. We're not, you know, it's not like everyone's just constantly walking around Canada saying, you know, "Come help us. We're in the Amazing Race." You know, I don't think they were saying travel documentaries too much, as like what we've talked about before. Yeah. But so I don't know. I don't think there's that much else from this, but I guess this does lead us into the final challenge.
Yes. The riddles from the race. This, I don't know. It's basically just kind of putting rhymey things on every like flag/image/greeter memory task we've ever had, but it was challenging enough that it got everybody into one place at one time. And that's something that not even some of the best memory tasks have been able to accomplish. So I have to love it for that. And it was very tense. And I was super excited when they were all four there and it looked like it could finish. Like, we could not have called the order at that point.
Right. That was cool, I thought. It was just, it was fun. And like we talked about earlier, you know, it coming down to the last one, but you just seeing all the teams in the library, which looks like a pretty cool place. I like that view of that. Like, you know, they're upstairs, they're downstairs, they're all asking for a check. And like you said, it could have gone any which way. And while it's, you know, someone could say, well, what about all the other things? But for TV, like, you know, you're on the edge of your seat and there's really, they were walking to the next thing. There was not going to be some weird team gets lost kind of situation unless they finished at the same time, which it didn't seem like it. So this was it.
Yep. This was for all the marbles. I really thought, I kind of overthought this, Dan. I was really focused on, like, I'm going to have to go back and like Zapruder this, because we get a lot of questions about the memory task where people are asking us, what do you do on a memory task for a team that used a fast forward? What do you do on a memory task for a team that took the other half of the detour? Can you include that, or is it not fair game if every team didn't do it? And that question is a question that I have magnified about 20,000 times for this particular season of The Amazing Race, because I have to wonder, did we just decide to cut out an entire like 2-week span of everything that happened because it wouldn't have been fair to Catherine and Craig? Or was maybe everybody's board a little bit different? Or what do you think? How do you think they dealt with that?
Well, it's interesting because John said the 9 legs where everyone collectively competed. So to me, I think Catherine and Craig missed 2 legs. So mm-hmm. if you include the finale as a leg, then it would work because basically they did, you know, I think they went, oh my gosh, whichever legs they missed, was it 4 and 5? I think 4 and 5 were the ones yeah. they missed. So essentially, yeah, because it was basically the first 3 were Julian, Kathy, Courtney, Allie, Cassie, and Jamique. So they missed 4 and 5. So if you just do 1, 2, 3, and then 6 and on, you get 9 of them, or 1, 2, 3. Yeah. I'm not going to do the math anymore. But there's 9 legs. So he, like, because John specifically said that they collectively competed. So I think that's it. But your other point about detours, they didn't have any fast forwards, but detours and things is interesting. Yeah, because you'd really have to zone in and say, what were, and I did not like pause and zoom and do all those things, but we really didn't see that many clues. They showed us a few just to be like, oh, here's that funny moment where Brendan and Connor were dancing, or here's this moment or whatever, like the car racing, because of course they had to show the car racing. That's the law on The Amazing Race. Mm-hmm. But basically, they didn't show that much. So it wasn't one of those where you could really totally understand beyond a few clues what all of them were, unless you were really zooming in. I'm sure someone online has done more of this work, but it would be interesting.
Yeah. And I think we've been saying all season that we're astonished at how many tasks there were. Looked like you didn't have more than like 3 magnets per destination. So my guess is they probably just skipped all the detours entirely.
Right. That would make sense because you could do like a lot of the leads. Oh, there's a face-off. Everyone did that. Let's put that one in. Or because, yeah, every task probably had at least a route info and a roadblock and something else. And maybe even if the show got really like clever, they could actually pick the detour sides that everyone that still left did. There probably were a few of those because you did see cases where a bunch of teams would do the same thing. Now, granted, that wasn't every time, but it might be a case. So maybe there's ways you could do it where you have a bunch of cards written. And then depending on who makes the finals, you can use different cards. Now, granted, maybe they didn't need to, but it's just another thought. Maybe they were all tasks that were like, here's where you got the certain guru energy. Like, here's where we offered you the lime or everything, you know, all those. Here's where you booked that ticket with Expedia.
Yeah. The SpawnCon memory task, like that is next level, Dan. I would love it if it had been a different flavor of guru energy at every sign up board. And then you had to match the flavor to the board. That would have been incredible because that would also force everybody to have to drink the guru energy.
Brendan and Connor would be like, because they seem to be the ones most excited about, like they were even like, it's guru time. And at the end, I thought the math at the end with John said, so yes. How did you have enough energy to race as the credits were rolling? Poor Brendan Connor there, but that's what happens with 4 teams. But then I was in my head, I was like, say guru energy, say guru energy. They did not do it, but it would have fit perfectly with the show.
Was John setting them up like when somebody wins the Super Bowl and they ask them where they're going next? Was that a setup and they just didn't take the bait?
Maybe that's why they put it on the credits, because they were just like, John had this look in her eyes like, guys, you ruined everything. I coined my phrase. I'm talking about energy. You just didn't do it. I had such high hopes for you. And John even, you know, threw in the get in the pocket, of course, because, you know, he had to. But yeah, that's an interesting, could they have done a memory task or a task during the race where, like, you know, like the Snapple task, but you did mm-hmm. it with guru energy and to see if they could identify the different flavors. Now that's a good sponsorship task, not for the finale, but that's a good one for the future, I think.
Yeah, those are tricky though, Dan, because you run the risk of having somebody really hate the product. And then, like, especially I'm thinking of that Snapple task where they just had a room full of tea and had like poor Luke, who has probably still like 14 years later, never looked at tea again. It is. You do run the risk of having a situation where somebody's just like the whole time, oh, I freaking hate guru energy. It's the worst. I will never drink guru energy. I will curse it with my dying breath. And that is a problem if you want to continue to promote the product on your show.
Yeah, it's like, or worst case, they start throwing up. It's like, oh, no. Yeah. No, because normally the shows never pass up a good opportunity, especially Australia, never pass up a good opportunity to show something throwing up. But, you know, maybe here they would not do that. And the task would magically disappear from the show.
Yeah, it'd be an unaired task.
Oh, it's like, why does everyone look so sick? Like, oh, it was all that guru energy. That was it.
I think this might be a Four Loko scenario where there's a legal limit to how much guru energy a human being should be having.
There probably is. I mean, I drank one and there was no part of me that thought, well, it'd be great to have another one right now. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just an energy drink that you're drinking is not like, you know, there are people that do this, but for me, it's like, I'm good. You know, that's enough energy. I think I have enough good energy for now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 15. I'm not going to chug two energy drinks in a row.
Not drinking 64 ounce sodas anymore. This is not what I'm doing. No super.
No, I haven't touched Mountain Dew since the 90s.
We're not the target audience. We need the good.
I mean, it is organic. I think they're trying to appeal to our like upper middle class, middle aged sensibilities, but it's not working. I think it's a very, the threshold of number of guru energy drinks I'm going to drink in my lifetime, it's pretty low.
Yeah. The one I got, I did get it at Whole Foods. So, you know, right there, it's like, ooh, high end sort of.
Yuppie beverage.
I guess. I don't know. Not that I spend a lot of time at Whole Foods, but so should we talk about the mat and the actual finish here? I have a few thoughts here.
Oh, I want to hear them.
Well, here's the deal. So Jess, I don't get that emotional usually. I'm not like a crier that often, you know. I mean, something happens to a kid on a show. Okay, that's tough, you know. But this moment, I have to tell you, when you have Catherine up there, she's talking about, first, they were just so amazed. Like, her face was like, I can't believe this is happening. And then she's talking about live your life and everything. And man, Jess, I don't know. Mm. I mean, it's been a tough week. Just a couple few weeks for me. I don't have to go into that. But I will say, it was a moment. It was not the typical, oh, that's nice, they won. I was just like, oh my gosh. And I felt like so good for them. And I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, they're talking about, she's like, live your life, and really hits you. It's like, man, brain cancer and everything else. And it's just such a great moment. And I was just really happy for them and just shed a few tears, I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely poignant. And I think Craig and Catherine, if the Reddit boards and Twitter are any kind of gauge of what the fan base on the whole is thinking, they were kind of a polarizing team, mostly because Craig's energy, I think, is a lot for some people. But man, you cannot begrudge them the win just because of Catherine's story and because of her much more eloquent and touching way of saying YOLO.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where we get to the end, though. I would have loved to see Frenella win. I really like them as racers. You know, Jesse and Marika, I felt like, finished strong, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, Brendan Connor would have been fine. I hate to say it like that. Brendan Connor would have been fine. But no, they seem like fun guys. So this is a weird case where it wasn't like I went into the finale going, it's got to be Catherine and Craig, because those other teams, you know, oh my gosh. No, it was a good group. And I mean, we saw Jesse Marika finish second. I thought had a really nice moment too. You know, Frenella came in really, you know, have really happy. It was one of those cases where I look at it and I'm like, I thought it was great, the team that won, but there was multiple ways this could have been a really satisfying ending.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to see Frenella come back. If we had an all-star season, I think they are some of the smartest racers we've ever seen. And definitely some of the most entertaining. I would put them on my list of teams that are on, I'd put them on the all-star shortlist for sure. But I think any of these, I would not be surprised to see any of these final four teams come back at some point. Even Jesse and Marika, who, you know, we kind of dunked on Jesse all season for having no personality. I think the contrast between their two personalities, especially this week, was really writ large. And I'd say all four of the top four teams are all-star material for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, next season, when you're getting up to season 9, it seems, especially after the weirdness of the season, I feel like we've got enough teams for sure where you could do it and have a strong group and have a variety. And I think like, it's not like one of those where you're like, All Stars in season 4, what are you doing? Or, you know, Australian Survivor is just like, we can't bring all new people. We got to do different stuff. Where here, it's like, I think we'd have a good group. And I agree with you about Fernella and Jesse Marika. I mean, I will say, I know I talked a lot about, but his let's go and his enthusiasm and encouragement so genuine that you can't help root for that, because it wasn't that it was just like he was sleepwalking. That's just his personality. But you could just tell those two too. I mean, she would get frustrated. And if she had a partner that also got frustrated, they would not have made it this far at all. So, no. I mean, you know, I think they balanced each other really well.
Well, that was definitely something we were talking about this morning in relation to Amazing Race US, where you can be a very emotional person and not be a bad racer, which some people do let the emotions get the better of them. And some people, that's just how they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too. And that I also think, too, though, having her also kind of pushes him a bit, because he almost might be so low-key that sometimes you need to have somebody who's like, no, Jesse, we've got to get going. We're in last. And he's like, oh, we're going to be good. We're going to be good. If you had two Jessies, that's not a great approach either, I don't.
That man braces for a living, Dan. Think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be okay. But I'm just saying, sometimes you need a little get up and go. And I think he has that. Obviously you have to have that to be an Olympian, you know, and they made it on the podium, John, they were second, but I think they would be great. And I don't mean to pick on Brendan O'Connor, because I felt like you got a team that's bringing that much energy. Even if sometimes I'm like, okay, guys, I'm good. It's much better than people bringing no energy. So I think, and I'm not talking about Guru energy again, I promise.
Maybe that was the missing ingredient. Maybe that would have made us more satisfied with the Gino and Jesse win. Maybe if Guru Energy had been a sponsor, we would have gotten more out of them.
I don't think it was possible. They would have been like, oh, there's some energy drink. Okay. All right. Let's go. We really want to win. Now, and again, this is all from my memory. I haven't gone back and rewatched Gino and Jesse's win or anything. Yeah, I don't think season 3 would be the first one I would go back to. But you never know. Maybe we're undervaluing that. Who knows?
I've not rewatched any of Amazing Race Canada ever, and I need to do that at some point in my life. I feel like I have so many fond memories of Amazing Race Canada that, you know, I've rewatched a lot of Amazing Race US. I've rewatched some of Amazing Race Australia. This seems like it's ripe for a rewatch.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad we didn't have a few years with no Amazing Race Canada where I could have done this. You know? but hey, if they decide to do an all-star season, which I have no idea, watching some of the early seasons, because it would be interesting to see. I have a feeling if they did all-stars, they would do a few big names from the early seasons and then the recent seasons. And it's probably some of the ones in the middle that we don't see as much from. Maybe season 3? I don't know. But yeah, and 3 and 4. Might be left out. Not that we're casting an all-star season or anything, but I feel like that's usually what they do. So those really early seasons might be worth rewatching, because if they did all-stars, you're likely going to see a few from that era. Well, maybe not as many from season 1, because one team did so well last season.
Yeah. I wonder if that makes them more likely or less likely to be cast.
I don't know. I think they still might cast them though. I don't know. I think
they might.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Rob Mariano kind of situation. It's like he's willing to do it. Yes, we'll do it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, he could go pre-merge, but we don't care. We still got him back.
Yeah, some reason. But, well, yeah, I mean, before we do questions, I mean, I don't know. I think it was a satisfying finale and enjoyed watching it again. And I feel like the season, I feel like, ended after all the weirdness. I feel like the last 3 to 4 weeks was pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I'm super satisfied with it. It really felt like a good warm up to Amazing Race US. Like, I'm coming into Amazing Race US. Sometimes when I come off of a summer of Amazing Race Canada and I'm going right into the next season of Amazing Race with a little break, it's like, oh, more of this now. great, we're going to rip a clue and get on a plane and go to a town and do some stuff. Yay. But no, I'm like legitimately pumped. I feel like it's been a good, amazing race year. And I am very excited to have more amazing race in my life. And this just sort of ended on such a high note that I'm glad that there's more for me to go to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like 9 episodes behind on Amazing Race Australia, so I'm good for a while. US, sure, we'll do that, but I'm good for a long time.
Highly recommend if/when you do get around Amazing Race Australia, get a browser plugin that lets you watch it at like 1.5 speed or even 2 speed. Sometimes I kick it up to 2 speed and I don't feel like I'm missing much.
Yeah, it's I have to say those episodes don't need to be an hour and 8 minutes. I mean, that's no commercials, but I think the sweet spot is about 50 minutes, and it's the same thing with Survivor. There's a point where you're like, maybe this is too much. I don't know. So it's a little slow.
A little bit. Yeah. All right, Dan, let's get into some listener questions. But before we do that, let's take a moment and hear from some of our sponsors. And we're back. And I know that it is not your favorite thing to hear from the sponsors, but they really help us keep the lights on around here, and we appreciate all they do. So by supporting sponsors, you are supporting us, and I appreciate them and you. So Dan, let's get to some questions.
We had a few that were just such a close race, Lord Cherry or Kelsey Ann, no question, but I really enjoyed the finale. So I mean, based on that scientific study, people seem to enjoy the finales. But here's a longer question from Nadine Anderson on Facebook, or a longer statement. Is this one of the most exciting and satisfying finales ever of Amazing Race? Lots of tasks, team switching placements, a great memory task with all teams there at the same time with a plausible chance to win, plus really great winners. Parentheses, they all, why did I have the parentheses? They all would have been, but these two tug at the heartstrings. I hope someone at Amazing Race US has been paying attention to this season. So, Jess, you've seen a lot of Amazing Race, as have I. I'm not asking you to rank all of them or anything, but just in general, how do you feel about this finale compared to the overall kind of breadth of Amazing Race finales?
Well, I think it's top tier for sure. I think Amazing Race finales tend to be some of the most disappointing legs of the whole season, and this one really wasn't. I would say this might be one of my favorite legs that we saw this season, and the story was really interesting to follow. There was never a moment where I was 100% sure of what was going to happen next. And I think if I had to go back and name some favorite final legs, I could probably come up with some, but this one would probably be up there for me.
Yep. My memory, and I have not rewatched it, Amazing Race Canada 4 had a really strong finale from what I remember. I think I said finale there, but
no, this was the finale.
They were not there, I don't think.
No.
But I just remember that being really close with Steph and Kristen and Julian and Emmett and stuff. So
that's,
I need
just
to go
because
back to
you're
that
a
one.
Steph and Kristen stan.
I also remember when Adam and Courtney won. That was a really good. Oh, wait, I picked the winners. No. But and of course, season 2, I think, had a really good finale because it was unpredictable. But just in the U.S., I think the ones that we tend to remember are ones that come down to like a really crazy memory test. But I think the difference is when they seem close and fair, I feel like those are the best. And then sometimes there are ones that are just kind of painful, or when a team kind of like, you know, a Beekman type team, when they go to the front, I don't like those. Those seem weird. So it's kind of that weird mix of like, with me, with the finale, I like the teams being close, but I also want the final task to seem fair, and that can really vary.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think fairness is a really important metric when it comes to this stuff.
Okay. So what else? I mean, some of these we've already addressed, so I'm trying to think of if you see anything else that we should definitely handle here.
Well, I wanted to talk about, Edward Giordano had an interesting question that he raised earlier today. He said, has anyone ever made it to the finale mat and had to serve a penalty for cheating, skipping a task, forgetting to pay their taxi driver, not having their bags, or not donating all their money to an orphanage?
Yes. And you responded, and this was the one I thought of too, which was Amazing Race 20, which I actually rewatched pretty recently with such, I mean, that finale is something, but you've got
that's in my top 5 for sure.
Well, plus you've got two And this, I'm not including Brenchel in this. You have two pretty unlikable teams in the finale that have also kind of dominated the season. And then you have Brenchel and you're like, wait, I'm rooting for Brennan and Rachel. I don't understand what's happening. But to go with what they're talking about, you have Dave and Rachel. But they get to the finale and Dave's, then they're confused because they arrive. It's one of those like teams have done this before, like a Derek and Drew type situation, but not in the finale where you get to Phil and you're like, wait, what happened? And this is, of course, the great moment that they put in the preview where Phil's like, you haven't done the sled or whatever. Meanwhile, Art is over there just crashing over and over with the sled that looks very easy. And of course, it leads to a cool finale. But that's the only one I can think of in terms of the finale and a team getting there. The one that I thought of just though that almost happened was with Uchenna and Joyce with season 7, where they didn't forget, but they didn't have the money. And again, I still don't know how close really was, but you have this moment where Uchenna and Joyce, at the time, very popular team, going up against Rob and Amber, who'd been dominating it. And they realize when they're in the taxi, we don't have enough money. And they are at the finish line. All they have to do is run, and they can't figure out how to pay their cab driver. And they did ultimately borrow money and everything else and end up winning. But that could have been that way. But I can't think of any others. The season 20 is really the only one, and that finale too, because again, dominant teams, Brenchel, and then what happened is one of the crazier finales we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think a lot of the old school fans also put season 2 up there because that's the only time we've really legitimately had an actual foot race to the mat. But I think most of the time it's like, you know, by 20 minutes in who's going to win. And it's just a matter of like, we got to see it through to the finish.
Right. Yeah. Season 2 does have a good finale. There's a lot of stuff with Will from Will and Tara in that finale. There's one where he's trying to open this like ice thing.
Yes.
He's getting like the blowtorch and all this stuff. And then Blake just walks up and gets it. And then him losing the clue and having to figure out how to get through Alaska. I mean, that is like, plus those early finales, they had the double legs. So they were so long, and granted, felt a little padded, but what that did is that made those feel really epic because they were often doing, like they always have them to go to like Alaska or do something where they were kind of climbing ice and all this stuff. So they didn't feel rushed. And that's the one thing that was nice about some of those for sure.
Yeah, there was a rhythm to those early ones. And spoiler alert for Amazing Race US, this week there is a task that involves retrieving a clue out of a block of ice. And I definitely thought about poor Will trying to get that clue out of the ice.
I referenced that to my daughter because we had watched season 2. Well, there was a sneak peek. We haven't actually watched the US one. And they showed that. And I'm like, oh, it's like season 2 with Will. Because that's one of the sillier moments of, well, any Amazing Race, really. But yeah, so the finales can be okay sometimes. I also feel like with the US, there's just the ones you tend to remember are the most egregious ones that aren't good. Like I always think of season 28. And just some of the ones where it's just like, there they go. And a team just kind of drifts, goes off into the sunset, or the final task of 127 where they had to make the chair. I mean, there's some that it's just like, that's the end. So I do feel like the last task can make a big difference.
Yeah, it absolutely can. And 27 was probably going to be in the conversation for one of the better ones until you hit that kind of lame task.
Well, right, because they did do a lot, and there was the whole factor too of having such a dominant team with the green team, and then everything else going on with that. The one finale that's really fun is when the team goes to the dump, which is the hardware store, which season 19. where they're supposed to go to Margaret Mitchell's house, known as the dump, and instead go to a hardware store, which Jeremy and Sandy. I don't remember these that well. It's because I've watched them more recently, but that's a good finale. Now we're just drifting into weird finales. I know that's kind of we're away from the question, but I think it's a fun topic for today.
Yeah, it was a good jumping off point. And let's see, we got a great question from Julie Wood, who says, watched last week's episode too late to submit my question, but here goes. When Fernella was driving, I noticed they had tin portents. This is the first time I noticed a team stopping for food and or coffee, and it seemed odd that they would make a stop in the middle of the race. Were they using the washroom there, decided to get something then? I don't know. Have you ever noticed it before?
It's rare, but I feel like the show tries to not show it very often. You notice something I noticed, too, is that they didn't mention money this whole time. You know, like in the U.S., it's usually like, you have $100 or whatever.
Yeah, but US doesn't do it anymore either.
I guess they've just moved away from that. And I'm thinking more of kind of like it being something that was more common. But yeah, that's not something. But in general, I mean, they do buy food, especially like, you know, during the race, at least. And you probably, I feel like you know more of the backstory on a lot of this, but I feel like they'll buy food. I think a lot of times they try to rely when they used to fly more. The teams would really rely on food in like airplanes or, you know, things like that. Or they would try to buy cheap food. But every once in a while, you'll spot when they're like a quick shot in a car or something. But the show really tries not to show too much. I do think about, there's one really funny example. I forget what season, but there's the couple that got engaged on the race. And that couple, they end up losing at one point because they're sitting there eating Dairy Queen at the airport while the other teams are getting a better flight, and then they end up getting eliminated in that leg. And it's like the show kind of makes the point that it's because they were eating Dairy Queen at the airport that they weren't actually getting it. And I don't think that was actually true. I wish I could remember their name. Chad and Stephanie.
In Oman.
Yeah. So that's a rare case. I mean, last year on Amazing Race Australia, it was a while before they really made a point that Subway was a sponsor, and they kept showing them eating Subway. And I was like, why is it Subway? I don't understand. And then they had the Subway task. Like, oh, okay, I get it. So in that season, I think they were handing out Subway during the season to teams because teams, it was kind of like the Guru Energy, but teams were constantly eating it. So I think teams are buying food, but I'd love to hear your thoughts because you may know some more behind the scenes about how they kind of maneuver their way through it.
Yeah, I don't think I know anything that you haven't already brought up, Dan. I think they get a certain amount of money that they're supposed to use to pay cab drivers and whatnot. They've been really cagey about that in recent seasons because I think there's been a lot. They want to avoid those ugly scenes where like you can't pay a cab driver because you spent all your money on Dairy Queen or something stupid like that. And so I think they've kind of gone away from talking about money, especially like in countries where there's a huge income disparity. You don't want to spend too much time dwelling on that. But it is known that they do get a certain amount of money on every leg, and they can use that however they want to use it. And frequently they do use it to buy like some snacks, but you don't see it a lot. I think one of the seasons with Ron and Christina, there was a very funny scene where Ron is standing there with a bag of snacks and like offering it to the other people there while they're waiting for their partners to finish the roadblock. That's the only time I can remember like snacks just sort of being around, but it does happen.
There was something in the Amazing Race 31. I don't know if it was an extra scene on YouTube or a scene where Leo and Jamal bought like fast food at the airport for everyone.
Oh yeah, and I remember that.
So, and then I don't know if they bought it for everyone or just certain teams. And they were like, we're trying our hardest to make everybody happy and all those things. So, but you know, another thing too, though, is with a lot of the legs being fairly short, like we've talked about it this season where, I mean, yes, you're doing bus rides and everything else, but with like, you know, they might stay overnight or whatever. Maybe the meat of the leg is only, no pun intended, 2 or 3 hours or something. That teams may just like eat a lot at the hotel or eat whatever the show provides during a pit stop and just kind of power through the few hours and then just don't spend the money.
Yeah, I think that's probably more likely what happens. And Julie had another question. She had remembered me mentioning last week or a couple of weeks ago that I had a coworker who was on a cruise in the Canadian Maritimes right now. And she wanted to know if they were making a stop in St. John, New Brunswick. And they were indeed. It is our ship that goes there. So I work for a cruise company, and this is why I have coworkers who go on cruises all the time. And our ship actually does have a couple of different routes that go through St. John. And this was in fact one of them. So yes, she probably, if Julie was looking out her window at cruise ships one day, she might've seen ours, although it's not very big. So she may not have noticed it.
Well, excellent. Excellent. I should give one quick mention of the final Go RV in Canada YouTube subscribers check. It went up a little more, Jess. It's up to 2.47K. And I promise to everyone here who knows, I will not be checking this every week when I'm not doing a podcast. Sure, in a few months, I may just see if it was all organic, not guru organic, but if it was all organic or if we actually had a rep bump. I'm going to assume the RHAP bump is real and that we caused those extra 60 people to subscribe. So to all of you, thank you for helping John to make another season of BrewDocking, which I have no idea if that will ever happen, but I think we're helping.
I mean, I hope they do because it was extraordinarily well made. And I feel like I know a lot more about Canadian beer now. Although I think the van that sells records in Calgary is no longer in business, Dan. So maybe the rehab bump isn't as strong as we thought it was.
What? The B-Dick bus? I mean, come on. I think that was like, that was a long time ago.
That was a really long time ago.
They actually needed us because that was one of our first few seasons. That might've been three or maybe season four, yeah. So if we had just kept mentioning them, maybe they would have survived. It's all, we got to blame the pandemic. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, like that was a pandemic casualty for sure. All right, Dan, I think that brings us to the end of season 8. And I can't believe we got all the way through it. And I'm thrilled for Craig and Catherine, a little sad that we won't be doing this every week anymore. But, you know, there might be some extra surprises coming up. And of course, we're not going to stop podcasting just because we stopped podcasting about this. So why don't you tell the good people what else is going on in your world?
Well, I'm sure you want to hear me keep talking about lots of cool stuff. So I do a podcast about theme parks called the Tomorrow Society Podcast. Next week on Monday, I have a new episode where I am talking with a guy named Jamie McGow, who is an Imagineer who does digital sculpting, meaning he sculpts figures. He sculpted the guy who looks like Admiral Akbar, Lieutenant Beck, in Rise of the Resistance. He sculpts rock work. He also, my favorite thing, sculpted space meat, which is like fake meat at Ronto Roasters that they have like going through in the circular. And, you know, he's done a lot more things than that. The meat is not really his top priority, but talk to him about that. Really fun conversation. And you can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just look for Tomorrow Society.
You know, Dan, you're my favorite podcast that interviews digital space meat sculptors.
It was my first digital sculptor and first person where we talked about the space meat. But when he mentioned he had done that, I was like, yep, that's getting asked because this is podcast gold, Jess.
For sure. I can't wait to listen to that. And over on my neck of the woods, as mentioned before, Amazing Race US has started up. And as you are listening to this, you will find the first episode recap on the main Rob's podcast feed or in the Amazing Race feed. And that has already dropped. And we had a great time. Rob Cesternino and Mike Bloom and I broke down everything. And then Rob interviewed the first team eliminated. And I will be on those interviews going forward. I just couldn't make this one this week. So that's coming up. And then over on Post Show Recaps, Walking Dead is starting up very, very soon. And I'll be on that with Josh Wigler and Chappelle and AJ Mass. And then I'm going to just be very cryptic here. I have another podcasting project that is coming up very soon, but I can't tell you what it is. And I'm going to be very secretive about it. But people that have listened to me podcast for low these past literal 10 years, I think you're going to be excited about it. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So I also want to invite you all. There's so much content out there in the Rob Has a Podcast universe. And we wanted to tell you specifically about, it is the start of many new reality TV seasons. So we wanted to make sure you're subscribed to Rob as a Podcast. And from now to the end of September, for every new follower of RHAP, Rob's going to donate $2 to the Boys and Girls Club. So subscribing is free and you'll be supporting a great cause. So Rob and Nicole selected the Boys and Girls Club, whose goal is to provide safe spaces, life-enhancing programs, and mentorship to help support and empower all kids to live up to their full potential. So if you're already subscribed, recommend it to your friends. Borrow your grandpa's iPad. Listeners can visit robsawebsite.com /subscribe to subscribe to the main feed, plus individual feeds for all of our shows. I'm not sure exactly how he's counting that, but, you know, if you have subscribed to us on the Amazing Race feed, couldn't hurt to subscribe to the Rehap Ups feed. You know, get on that main feed too. You need lots of content. Everybody's going back to the office. You need stuff for your commutes. So that's my plug for everybody. I think that's about it. If you want to talk the season with us, we're not done talking about it. Of course, you can hit us up on the Twitter. You can tweet at Dan at the Dan Heaton. You can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie. And we love hearing from you. Want to know what you thought of the finale and what you thought about the season as a whole. It'd be really great to hear from you. So, Dan, any parting words as we close the book on season 8?
No, I thought it was a great season. I was trying to think of something witty that John would say, you know, but, you know, it's been, to coin a phrase, an amazing podcast. I'm glad we got to do this, and hopefully they'll come back next season. And I'm also looking forward to listening to all of you on Amazing Race US. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So thank you once again to Dan for putting up with me throughout the season. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre and Chelsea and everybody else who works behind the scenes to get this podcast up and running. And of course, more than ever, thank you to all of you, the listeners, for making this podcast the great experience that it is. So take care, everyone, and we'll see you next season.